Hey, Alyssa talked earlier about that carding your seat and filling that out and signing up for the Hope Team, or you can go online and sign up there. I wanna read off a list of people that's not going to make sense for a second, but just give me through that. So here's the list of names I have. Elizabeth Ewart, Matt and Katie Longbreak, Stephen and Alyssa Storr, John Scruggs, Hannah Scruggs, Andrea Scruggs, Robin Pace, Rebecca Pace, Lydia Pace, Ed Check, Melissa Sandahl, Elena Kreider. I'm not calling you to the principal's office, just to be clear. Ryan and Sarah Webb, Daniel Godsey, Patrick and Kelly Martell, Allie Hefner, Wesley Chivington, Ellen Cheney, Chris Bailey, Ken Collier, Bernice Collier, Jordan Watkins, and Jordan Keir. These are people who have, as of now, signed up to be a part of our Fairborn launch team in September. Would you give them a round of applause? I think that is awesome. We have joked on our staff that as Matt Scruggs, our campus pastor for Fairborn, has gone around talking, prodding, recruiting. I don't know what exactly verb to use within there. And the joke has been at times they're like, Matt, you're stealing, you're poaching people, you're doing this. They go, no. We rejoice in sending people to do what God has led them to do. We rejoice in that and celebrate that over and over again. So I want to let you know, man, if you want to be a part of that, there's all the different descriptions of places you can serve and areas that you can use your giftedness to contribute. And man, I want to encourage you to do that. But if you look at the Fairborn one, it just says Fairborn. And you may go, well, what am I doing if I'm a part of that? And the answer is a little of everything. Because that's what it takes to plant a church. So I invite you to be a part of that. If you have your Bible with you, we're going to be in Genesis chapter 29 this morning. We are continuing our trek with the account of the life of Jacob. And we have seen, up until now, we have seen Jacob as a man who is defined by his ambition. At his best and at his worst, we have seen that when that ambition is channeled in a kingdom-minded purpose, channeled in a good way, that it is him at his best. We are just coming out of a situation in which he has deceived his brother and is on the run, in which his ambition has defined him at his worst. And this is what I want to do today. In the account that we want to look at is I want to dive into the issue of motivation. And while that may sound like more of just kind of like a surface level concept, I think that's an incredibly important idea in terms of the things that drive us, the level of inspiration and energy and enthusiasm for the different things that we do. And if you're unaware of the idea that we're going to talk about today, the principle that we're going to wrestle with, the reality is this, is that you may go through the majority of your life in terms of your work, in terms of your relationships, in terms of all the significant things, and there is the possibility that you are going to attempt to just get an energy boost, a pick-me-up, a little more caffeine, and fight a losing battle if you're unaware of this thing that Jacob discovers in his life. So this is Genesis chapter 29, verse 14. It says this, after Jacob had stayed with Laban, Laban is his uncle, had stayed with Laban for about a month, Laban said to him, you shouldn't work for me without pay just because we are relatives. Tell me how much your wages should be. Now Laban had two daughters. The older daughter was named Leah, and the younger one was Rachel. There was no sparkle in Leah's eyes, but Rachel had a beautiful figure and lovely face. Pause right there so we can know exactly what's going on. It describes Leah that she has no sparkle in her eyes. She has no sparkle in her eyes. And so you would expect that if that's what we're really talking about, that it would say Leah had no sparkle in her eyes. And so then it would be followed by, but Rachel had sparkly eyes, right? Like, if the issue was the sparkle in her eyes, that's what it would say. There was no sparkle in Leah's eyes, but Rachel, her eyes sparkled like the night sky. That's not what it says, is it? We get what's going on? Okay, good. Good? Yep, good. There was no sparkle in Leah's eyes, but Rachel, verse 18, I'll just skip on. Since Jacob was in love with Rachel, he told her father, I'll work for you for 7 years if you'll give me Rachel, your younger daughter, as my wife. Agreed, Laban replied.
I'd rather give her to you than to anyone else. Stay and work with me. So Jacob worked 7 years to pay for Rachel. 7 years. That's a really long time, right? Can we all acknowledge that 7 years is a really long time? Like, it doesn't take skyscrapers 7 years to be built. Think of all the things that you could do in 7 years. Like, think of all the places you could visit. You may at this point in time be able to binge watch through all of Grey's Anatomy. Like, I think we're getting up there. Like, 7 years. Are we not feeling that? Can we acknowledge that's a really long time? Now let's take advantage of that. If you're sitting next to someone who you really, really like, turn to them right now and say, I'd do it for you. If you didn't do that, then I just kind of had the define the relationship conversation for you right there. If you just sat there stone faced, like, oh, so just friends. I see, that's where we stand. 7 years. Guys, so Jacob worked 7 years to pay for Rachel, but his love for her was so strong that it seemed to him but a few days. The title of the message today, if you're taking notes, is Worth It. Worth It. That's what we're talking about today. Worth It. I want to ask you a question just to get this started. Let's say this. Imagine it like this. It's starting to get warmer outside. Let's say we're a couple months from now. It's hot outside. You have come in. You have just gone running or something like that, or you've been working outside or landscaping or pulling weeds, and you're hot. You're worn out. I don't mean like sparkly eyes hot. I mean like sweaty. You get what's going on. And so you come in from the outside and you're worn out and you need a cup of water. And this is gonna sound like a ridiculous question, but I promise you it'll be important in a second. And so you pour yourself a full glass of water, okay? You see it happen. You get the cup, put it under the tap because you don't need fancy water. You're not that kind of person. Put it under the tap. You get a full glass of water. And when you go to drink the water, it's half empty. And I don't mean this as like an optimist, pessimist. This is like, I think it's half full, Kevin. I don't care about that, okay? So it's like, it's half of what was in there is now not in there. Would you, at that moment, would you blame the faucet? Would you blame water? Water, man, what's with water? Or would you assume that something is wrong with the cup? What is your answer? The cup, right? If anyone didn't answer the cup, we need to have a conversation afterwards, okay? It's the cup. And so we would say, like, none of us in this room, none of us would go, like, nope, I blame water. Like, the issue is obviously the water. That's just how water is. It's just always falling out of cups. It doesn't function like that. Like, man, water. Water is the worst. No, we don't understand. But here's the interesting thing is why we say that, we're like, no, we wouldn't blame the water within there. I actually think that's kind of how we live our lives. Let me explain it to you like this. Sorry, I need to Vanna White my props. You're impressed, right? E. There's one E. No one watches Wheel of Fortune anymore, I guess. There we go. So let me describe it to you like this. This is what we do, is we go into, say, our job, and we're really excited about the job because it's a brand new job, and then slowly, just so you know, I'm going to make a mess all morning, so prepare for that. And we're like really, really motivated at first, but over time, slowly, we begin to lose that motivation. Or say we like take on a new project. At first we're like, we're really excited, but then slowly over time, we're not as pumped up at the new thing that happened. Or let me send this guy over here. Or let's say there's a new relationship that you have. And at first, like, And I'm not gonna get into specifics, but there's sparkle, and I'm not gonna say any more than that. And at first it's like, man, it's like you are pumped. Like you are so excited to be in this relationship. But then like as you get into the relationship and more things happen, it's not, you're just not as excited, right? Now, we wouldn't in this scenario go, well, the stinking water. I mean, the water, it just falls right out of there. That's just what it's gonna do. And when I was a kid, we used to play this game. I don't know if anyone else played this game. We used to play this game. It was how much? Anyone play the how much game? In which you just don't realize it yet. In which like various things would happen, and there'd be like you'd be walking along, and be like, hey, how much for you to do that? Oh, yeah. Yeah, there you go. You play it. You're like going along and there's like a piece of like moldy bread on the ground. You're like at a fair. You don't know how long it's been there. You don't know how many people have stepped on it. And you just be like, hey, $100? No, not 100. 200. Yeah, 200. I do 200. And then you have to drop it. You got to figure out what the exact number is. And you're like, 150. Yeah, 150. 125. No. 130? Yeah. 127.50. And it's kind of like this thing back and forth. I've got this vivid memory of being in elementary school and riding home on the bus. And this is like just after the hot dog eating competition happened. It's these people just like disgorge themselves on hot dogs. And it's a horrific, horrific thing to watch, to be honest with you. But so entertaining at the same time. And so all of us have watched that. And we're going through saying, like, hey, how much would someone have to pay you to eat 40 hot dogs? How much would someone have to pay you? Instead of like $20? Like, I don't know if I could do it. Like, well, you can make them come back up to clear room. I know that's gross, but that was part of the prayer. Like, you could do that if you need that extra space. Like, okay, $30. And so we're like going through and everybody's naming different numbers. And there's this like one kid on the bus who was a little weird. I'm going to acknowledge that ahead of time. You're like, hey, how much? Hey, Joe. That's his real name. I should have used a fake name. Hey, Joe. How much for 40 hot dogs? How much would someone have to pay? Like, man, I would pay $20 to eat 40 hot dogs. Like, oh, Joe, come on, man. And what we were constantly trying to figure out every single time is we're going through what this is. Because the reality is, as we go through these different arenas of our life, there is a level of, let's say it like this, a level of motivation that we can live at. And while the motivation will seep out, while the motivation will leak out from different things, it'll get certain points that it's like, hey, in certain areas, you can live on a certain level of motivation. So in your job, you may be able to, I'm waiting for that last little bit to go. There you go. Let me speed it up for a second. In your job, maybe you can live at this level of motivation. And if you're only this motivated, you would say that your job is worth it. You would say, like, I am willing to work at my job at this level of motivation. Or maybe you say, like, hey, working out, like, I'm going to get healthy. I'm going to go through that. What is the level of motivation that I'm willing? And you go, no, there is no level. Like, it just drops. I've got to keep filling it and having more ideas and being willing to do it in new ways. And we're constantly searching for that as to what would make it. Let me pour this in here. What would make it worth it? And then this is what we do throughout all of our lives is we go, well, how can I, we think the issue is this, how can I increase my motivation? Because that's what I need to do. I need to have more water in the cup in order to be willing to do the thing that I'm currently doing. And so maybe I'll read a self-help book. And maybe if I read a self-help book, maybe that will give me more motivation to do it. And I acknowledge that's going to drop, the water's going to leak out over time, but maybe that'll be it. Or maybe, you know what I need to do? Maybe I just need to get up in the morning and I need to listen to some Space Jam. No one else? Everybody get up. It's time to slam now. We got a real jam going now. Get ready for the Space Jam? Space Jam. No one? No one else? Am I the only one who knows the lyrics to Space Jam? Here's your chance. Do your dance at the Space Jam. All right, all right, all right. And so we go through, we go, like, maybe if I had that, or ready, here's the most common one. Give me just a second.
Maybe.
if I just had some caffeine, then I can do all the things that I've set out to do. And no, that's not enough. And so then this is the brilliant one that so many of us go to. Is we go, oh, if my motivation is too low, then I'm gonna have this fix for all of my life. I'm gonna go to a conference. And for a little bit of your time, oh baby, it is overflowing at the top, but there is still a problem that it is leaking out slowly over time. And this is the reality of how we live. We live with this continuously depleting amount of motivation, this continuously depleting amount of energy. Give me 1 second. I need more water. I spilled nothing. So I wanna reframe that for us though. Because while we spend that pursuit searching for more motivation, I actually don't think we're asking the right question. There's this brilliant example from a guy by the name of Viktor Frankl. And his book, if you have not read it, Man's Search for Meaning, should be required reading for everyone. Should be required reading. Viktor Frankl is a psychoanalyst who survived the horrors of the concentration camp during the Holocaust. And there was one day as he is going through the concentration camp that he passes by a guy he knows. And it was illegal. The idea of something being illegal in the concentration camp is hilarious that there were rules like this. But it was illegal to try to get someone else not to commit suicide. You couldn't talk someone out of suicide. You couldn't cut someone down from a rope. It was illegal to keep someone from committing suicide in the concentration camp. And so he walks past this man who is in the camp, and the man says, I'm going to kill myself tonight. And you would expect at that moment that Viktor Frankl would give him the like pump you up speech, giving him the no, this is what you need. No, your life matters. No, this is what's so important. You can do this. We'll get out. It won't be that bad. You would expect him in that moment to fill his cup, but that's not what Frankl does. This is what Frankl said to the man. He said, no, don't do that. Don't let your death be meaningless. If you're going to die, at least make your death matter. Let your death be a statement to the world as to how evil and terrible they are and how we retained our dignity even in the face of the most monstrous evil the world has ever seen. Make your death mean something if you're going to die. So he had this conversation, and he said, after he said this to the man put his shoulders back, puffed his chest out a little bit, and walked away from him with a newfound sense of determination. This is what Frankl did. He didn't try to change his motivation. He changed his motive. He didn't try to up his level of inspiration. He changed the reason behind why he should keep on living. And that's what I want you to see today in this series. We're piecing together these the Here That Matters statements. And what I want you to see today from Jacob's life and for your life in terms of a life that matters is this, is that the Here That Matters is about your motive, not your motivation. The Here That Matters is about the reason behind it. It's about the purpose that you have. It's about the significance of why you got engaged to begin with. It's not about your level of inspiration or your level of enthusiasm or your level of energy or how motivated you may be. It is about your motive, not your motivation. And this is where that is so important within our lives, is because I watch a lot of people struggle with their commitments, not because of motivation. And they think it's motivation. The reason why they struggle is because of motive. So let me describe it like this. If you go into your job with the desire to say, this job is going to be so meaningful, and I am going to accomplish, and I am gonna get promoted, and my bosses and my peers are gonna high-five me in and out of the doors every day because I am doing such significant work. I've gotta tell you, that motive has holes in it. Like, that motive leaks over time. And so if that is your motive, you're going to constantly fight this battle of trying to re-energize and re-engage yourself. But if you would, in the exact same job, come into that job and say, I want to do something that is meaningful. I want to do something that matters. What you're going to find is that's not nearly as hard to motivate. Now, there's still some holes in it. There's still some problems, but that is not nearly as hard to stay with. If you, let's say, when you get married because why do you want to get married? And Sweet Home Alabama wants me to say to kiss you anytime I want, but I won't say that because that would embarrass me in front of a whole room full of people. And so they say, why would you want to get married? I apologize. I don't know why I do these things that I do. Is they, why would you want to get married? You say, because every day I want to wake up and have someone who tells me how much they care about me and how wonderful I am and how special I am. Married people, is that what is going to happen within your marriage? No.
I've told you many, many times that I should not do counseling. Let me tell you a reason why I shouldn't. Years ago, I was sitting down with this couple, and the one couple, they were describing, it's a little slick up here, they were describing some of the troubles within their relationship, and the one couple was saying, the one spouse was saying some of the things that the other spouse had said to them. Some of the things they'd gone back and forth. And then they made this claim. They said, they're emotionally abusive. And I want to be really clear on this. Like, there are those instances. There absolutely are those scenarios. And I'm not attempting to make light of that in any way, because I think that is a really serious thing. And that happens in some relationships. And that's a terrible thing. What she was describing was not that. Like, what she was describing in that moment was not anywhere near that. And so I leaned in one of my finer moments as a pastor that I have ever had. I said, to be married is to be emotionally abused. And all the married people said, yeah, that's kind of right. You nailed that on the head. And so I say this to say, like, if you go into marriage and that's your purpose, the reality is this, is that that cup has holes in it. That motive isn't going to last. But if you get married and you go, you know what? I am here because I believe that we're going to make each other better. And in any circumstance, in any scenario, we're going to make each other better. The reality is this, is you're not going to struggle with motivation as much. Not nearly as much as if this is your motive. The same level of motivation will last you a lot longer. If you have kids in sports, for the purpose of saying, I want to live out my dreams of being in the NBA, you're going to realize your children have the same genes that you do. But if you have kids for another reason, you say, you know what, I want to make a difference. I want to be a part of what's good in the world, and I want to leave a legacy, and I want to create connection for people. All of a sudden, that doesn't leak as fast. And I show you all this to show you something so important that Jacob finds in his life. Is we look at Jacob and we go, how does Jacob do that? Like, again, I don't want to belabor it. I don't want to take this too far. 7 years. Like, 7 years is forever. Like, he works 7 years. But this is what we find out about him in verse 20. It says, so Jacob worked for 7 years to pay for Rachel. But his love for her was so strong that it seemed to him but a few days. Say, so, okay, so, like, we get it. She had sparkly eyes. You know, but why was he there? It wasn't lust. It wasn't sparkly eyes. It says his love for her was so strong that it seemed a few days. Here's the beauty of what Jacob realizes, is that there is one motive that doesn't need motivating. That when your motive is love, when love is at the core, when love is your purpose, when love is the thing that is driving you, that doesn't need constantly filled.
Like, that doesn't need more caffeine. That doesn't need a powerful speech or an inspirational quote in the morning or any of those things, because this cup does not have holes in it. And so often in our lives, the thing that we do is we go out seeking the next source of motivation and we seek that next thing. And I want to tell you today, quit seeking new motivation, change your motive. Like, quit seeking more inspiration, change your purpose behind it. And the reality is this, is you have met these people in your life. You have met these people who there is an energy to them, but they are not necessarily defined by their enthusiasm. Like, there is a pace to the work that they do that is meaningful, but you wouldn't say necessarily that they're charismatic. They're more resolute than anything else. They're steadfast and constant, but alive. And you go, what is it about these people? And the answer is this, is the thing that drives them isn't selfish. The thing that drives them is an accomplishment. The thing that drives them isn't anything on the outside. The thing that drives them is something deeper. It's the one motive that doesn't need motivation to keep going. And there's this piece in the process in terms of how you get there that for most of us we avoid, and that is the delay. And we all hate the delay. Like, every single one of us hates the delay. But the delay is necessary to figure out the right motivation. I want to show you this. This is what happens next in the passage. If you thought 7 years was bad enough, this is what happens in verse 21. It says, finally, the time came for him to marry her. I have fulfilled my agreement, Jacob said to Laban. Now give me my wife so I can sleep with her. That's a bold thing to say to your future father-in-law. Keep going. So Laban invited everyone in the neighborhood and prepared a wedding feast. But that night when it was dark, Laban took Leah to Jacob and he slept with her. So Jacob's a little tipsy and Laban sneaks in the older daughter instead of the younger daughter. Here's the beautiful thing is when we were going over this with our team, and talking about how we're going to do this at every level, we're going to do this with the adults and with the teenagers and with the kids. And we got to this story, and our next gen team just looked at me and go, how do you want us to teach that? And I said, you're professionals. That's really what I said. Good luck. Said Laban and give Leah a servant Zilpah to be her maid. Verse 25, but when Jacob woke up in the morning, it was Leah. What have you done to me? Jacob raged at Laban. I worked 7 years for Rachel. Why have you tricked me? It's not our custom here to marry off a younger daughter ahead of the firstborn, Laban replied. But wait until the bridal week is over. Then we'll give you Rachel too, provided you promise to work another 7 years for me. So Jacob agreed to work 7 more years. A week after Jacob had married Leah, Laban gave him Rachel too. Laban gave Rachel a servant, Bilhah, to be her maid. So Jacob slept with Rachel too, and he loved her much more than Leah. He then stayed and worked for Laban the additional 7 years. Here's the reality in our lives, okay? Jacob works worth it for Rachel. And then he wakes up with Leah. What do you do when you think you're getting Rachel and you wake up with Leah? What do you do when you think you are getting your dream job? What do you do when you think you are getting the career that you have longed for and you wake up and it's just a job? What do you do when you get married and you think you wouldn't say this to anyone out loud because you know they'd laugh at you, but you think you are getting match made in heaven and you wake up usually about 6 months later and it's not. You see, there is this between like the thing that we think that we're going to get and the thing that we get, there is this delay and we hate the delay. We hate the delay in every area of our lives. This is what I tell parents of middle schoolers all the time.
Parents of middle schoolers, they fret and they're like, oh, my kid's this, my kid's that. And I just say, they're in middle school. They are not who they're going to be. Like, they are not. In middle school, you are not who you're going to become later in life. Not saying that doesn't matter, not saying those years don't form and shape your path, but you are not who you're going to become. There is delay. There is always a delay. And what we do within the delay is we call people to persevere. And this is our motivational speech to those around us. And we go, no, you got to stick with it. You got to try hard. You have to persevere. But here's the reality of the delay. When you are in a delay, it is not just a call to persevere. It is a call to reconsider your motives. When you are in a spot, when you are in between what you were promised and what you have received, it is not just a call on your life to keep going, but to have the wisdom to reconsider why you got into it to begin with and to harness that opportunity to go, I'm not just gonna keep moving through this, but I'm gonna refine my motives. That is what the delay does. The delay decontaminates our motives from things that will run us dry. The delay decontaminates your ambitions and your desires and your motivations from things that won't last over time. And so we look at all this and we go, well, of course that's how Jacob became who he was. There was a delay. This is one of my favorite questions to get. When I'm out meeting someone in the community or when I'm meeting someone, it's their first time here, I often get this question. Someone will be like, hey, this is Kevin, he's our pastor. And the person will be like, oh. And they'll look at me and be like, the pastor? I was like, yeah, the pastor. And I know what they're thinking. They're thinking, age? You're the pastor? I saw a friend from college a couple weeks ago. We're at the gym together. He's like, what are you doing now? I was like, oh, I'm a pastor at the church in North Fairfield. He's like, you're the youth pastor? I said, no, I'm the pastor. He goes, head pastor. That's right. And I know the piece within there is they go, age, stuff like that. Are you able to do that? And this is what people don't see about my life is they don't see the delay. And here's the reality for me is that I was serving in the church for 20 years before I ever got up on stage with a microphone. I was serving in the church long, long before there was ever a light on me or anyone listened to a single thing that I had to say. And there's this piece of that, that when you go through that over time, it changes the reason why you're doing it. Like, if you get into it because you think that what I'm doing now would seem cool, that gets beaten out of you over 20 years. That's not enough. Like ambition, that's not enough payoff to keep you going when things are difficult, when things are hard. And I was talking to someone this morning, they asked, when do you guys get here on Sunday morning? I was like, we get here at 6:30. Like, oh, that's so early. I've been getting to church at 6:30 for almost 30 years of my life now. It's just what I do. It's part of what is who we are. And this morning, this is what I love this, and I know I've talked about this several times. Sunday mornings, my six-year-old, Emily, comes with me because she wants to help in the coffee bar. And so she gets up every Sunday morning at 6:30 to go help in the coffee bar. And we invite everyone who's been part of or joining the Hope team to sign that wall out there just kind of as this mark to show like, hey, this is what I'm a part of. And these are all the people who make it up. And so right after we had a team rally this morning, I brought Emmy over to the wall and I said, sign the wall. You're part of the team. And when she did, I got to tell you, that was an emotional moment for me. Crazy. To see my daughter write her name and put her Y backwards, which I did not correct in the moment because there were more important things at stake. But to see her go through that and then go, yeah, this is what matters. This is what I went through. And when you go through that struggle, it changes your motives. It changes your purpose. And what I'll watch very, very frustrated at times is I will watch people in their job or in their marriage or with their kids just simply try to up their motivation or not know why they aren't receiving what they felt was promised to them. And they waste the opportunity. So we live for the peak in our lives, right? Like, we love the peak. We love when things are going great. We love when things are excited. But here's the reality, is we're forged and formed through the valley. It is the hardship that we go through that strengthens us and changes our character. And the valley, the struggle, is an opportunity not just to be strengthened, but to change the direction that your life is headed. Amen. And I watch people go through the struggle and they never change direction. And they keep going through with the same motives. And I tell you, that glass has holes. That cup will become empty. You can play Space Jam on repeat over and over and over again. It's not going to be enough to keep you going. But here's the most important piece. As you go, man, Jacob did that? That's incredible. But it doesn't just speak about who Jacob is. It speaks to us about who God is. Because we have this thought of like the, man, how does God keep forgiving? It says that like God always accepts us. How does he always accept us in light of all the things that we've done? How is he like, it says that like God hears every request. I hear 1 out of 3 from my kids at best. Like I have just tuned the rest out. How is God able to do that? And John, one of Jesus's closest followers, John, who refers to himself as the one whom Jesus loved, in this moment of reflection, he writes these words, God is love.
Praise the Lord.
So this is what I want you to see. God's not struggling for motivation. Like God's not getting up in the morning like, all right, here we go, another day. Let's go. Let's go for it. Let me read an inspirational quote and post it on social media for other people. This is what I needed to hear today. No. He's never running dry on motivation. He's never running dry on reason to love you. And so this is what I want for you. I want you, as you go into all the different arenas of your life, I want you to reconsider your motive. I want you to reconsider your purpose. And if you're always lacking energy in your job, if every Monday you're like, oh, it's Monday, if every Thursday you're like, it's almost Friday, like you may need to reconsider your motive behind it and not simply have a pick-me-up. If instead of hurrying home to get to see your family, you're circling the block, I don't want you to read another parenting or marriage book. As helpful as that would be, I want you to change the reason why you're going home to begin with. Because it's not just so you can feel good about yourself. It's far more significant than that. And so I want you to reconsider it in that one sense. But honestly, the other piece of it is I want you to be a part of what we're doing here. I want you to be a part of the team here and the significant things that are happening. And I would love this. Like this would, in one sense, it would make it so easy for me if I could just get up and go, man, if you volunteer to serve, we will have donuts for you every single Sunday. We will have a new t-shirt for you every single week. That would be enough for me. I'm going to be honest with you. That would be enough. But we can't because of budgets. I wish I could say, man, it's going to be easy and it's non-committal. And you can call off at the last second and we're going to be like, thank you so much for calling. Praise God. We value you. And we're just going to be like, it's cool. We'll probably say all those things, but it'll be really passive aggressive in the way that we say it. I'm just going to be honest with you. Like, I wish I could say all those things, but this is what I can promise. Is that one, you'll make an impact. The one, that you will make a difference in someone's life. And two, that you'll grow. That you will grow from it. And if you get involved simply to go, man, I want someone to say, when I look back on my life, it's you. You were the biggest influence. That may happen. But it may take some time. And your motives may have to change over time. And your motives will become, through the delay, through the process, more and more something that is lasting. And Jesus tells this incredible story. He tells this parable of the shepherd who had 99 sheep and one wanders off. And he leaves the 99 to go and bring the one back. And you read that story and from an economic perspective, we go, that's ridiculous. Like, that's a terrible decision. And it seems that way. Until you know the one. Until the one who wanders off is your friend, or is your child, or is a family member, or is someone that you care about. And when that one who wanders off is someone that you know by name and story, then all of a sudden you go, that's exactly what you would do. And sometimes I'll have people, this is just, I'll probably share too much here. Sometimes I'll have people and I'll have conversations around the issue of preferences and be like, why don't we do this event? Why don't we sing this song? Why don't we do these other things? I really like it when we do this. And the thing that I just want to tell them within there is go like, you have no idea how much you are talking to the wrong person. You have no idea how much you are talking to the wrong person. Because I quit going to church for myself decades ago. And now the only reason why I'm here is what I believe God has called me to and the mission that I'm a part of. And so it's not preference that drives me in any way. It's love. It's love for God and it's love for his people. And when that is what drives you, you don't need filled up. You don't need a motivational speech. You don't need more caffeine, as good as caffeine is, to keep going. And that's what I want for you. Let me pray for you. Father, for every individual here, for the one struggling to keep going, for the one struggling to keep moving forward, don't let us turn to the same things. Don't let us fill up cups that are cracked, cups that are broken. Let us find a motive. Let us find a reason that is lasting. Let us find a love that you have called us to. That's what I want for us. That's what I believe you have laid out for us, that our lives would be defined by the energy that only your love can bring. And so give us that today. I pray this in the name of your son, Jesus. Amen.